Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody. I'm glad you're able to join us at a safe distance. I've got you all spaced out in the audience there. I'm glad you're all wearing masks. But thanks for joining us today. And my guest today is Eric Sims. And Eric is a contact center outsourcing expert who specializes in business development, sales, customer engagement, employee retention, technology solutions, and enhanced human operating systems. He currently serves as the co-founder and CEO of the Leading Edge Connections LLC, a revolutionary business approach to outsourcing contact center businesses that provision solutions in such a way to keep their clients on the leading edge of success. So welcome today, Eric. I'm really glad to have you on board, and I think our topic today is going to be very timely for those folks, you know, kind of planning for next year and looking ahead, you know, and how to leverage, you know, outsourcing to help them with their staffing, because, you know, we're seeing a lot of contact centers aren't going to go back to a regular, you know, brick and mortar facility. So maybe you can share with us and our audience out there, you know, how do you envision using outsourcing as a way to help them, you know, leverage this kind of staffing challenges that they're having today?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. And thank you for having me on the show. It's exciting to be on. It's a interesting and exciting time of the year and really season for outsourcing, right? And for the call center business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at to what you're asking, when you look at 2021, you know, this year, I think everybody was on their heels for most of the year because of the curveball we got thrown in March. A lot of people who had been resistant to virtual models were forced to go to virtual models. They may not have been optimal setups from a technology standpoint. And when you move to that setup, then comes all the other challenges of communication and management and oversight, and hiring and training and all the different things that maybe people weren't accustomed to. You know, we were lucky. We moved to 100% virtual from the get-go several years ago. So for us, it wasn't a huge change, but we were able to actually go in and lend a lot of assistance to people. When you look at next year, I think, you know, you see that a lot of the businesses that have tested out, especially in the U.S., tested out the virtual model are saying they're going to stay with it, or at least stay with a percentage of it. You know, they're going to, I don't know that a lot of them can just dump their huge buildings, because a lot of them are in these massive leases or our own property. But what they have been able to see is that there is value in this flexibility to be able to have people work from home or from work from wherever, as we call it sometimes. And it also opens the doors for some other opportunities. It opens the doors for some challenges, but it opens the doors for a lot of opportunities as well. And so I think, you know, onshore next year, you'll see people continue with that model. The opportunity around helping other companies and outsourcing is that there's a lot of businesses out there that just don't have the capacity to run from a fully virtual model or to have those resources. So I think when we look at outsourcing as a whole, not even just the call center model, just the outsourcing model, I'm excited because I think this is a time where we're going to see you've got the introduction of 5G as well, right? So you got this kind of weird technology thing going on, and there's all these new technologies coming out. And this new push to a new way of doing things. And I think we're going to see a lot of things emerge that we don't even know, right? Like I think there's businesses that will pop up that none of us have even thought of yet. Like, you know, much like it did in years past when you saw Uber come up and everybody's like, well, nobody ever thought anything like that would come up because previous to that, the technology wasn't there to allow for it. Now with these new advents and these new technologies, I think we'll see outsourcing evolve in a number of different capacities for industries it doesn't currently serve and types of business it doesn't typically service.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, with the introduction of AI and automation, you know, people kept saying, well, that's, you know, that's going to take away jobs and that's going to, you know, steal jobs away from people that are, you know, aren't skilled laborers, and, you know, it's just automating those types of things that are more skill-based. But quite frankly, it's, I think it's going to open the doors so that those people that were doing those just repetitive, mindless jobs, you know, which really aren't challenging to people, and people, you know, that's why there's high turnover in call centers, because it's just monotonous work, you know, and they need variety. So I think it's going to help elevate them into areas where they can lend value to the business that, you know, they may not have identified in the past, but now they've got, oh, this is off my plate. So now that this bot is doing this for me, what else can I do to add value to the business?
Well, exactly. And I think one of the things to keep in mind is that customer demand and customer need or business need isn't static, right? And so, again, when a lot of people, when they look at these emerging technologies like AI and some of the stuff, first off, let's admit it. Everybody loves to have a boogeyman, right? And so anytime there's something new, you have to turn it to some capacity. There's this fear factor that comes out that's like, oh, no, this is going to take all the jobs away. And you start hearing all these extreme conversations that are all fear-based. The reality is when you look at it, and historically, anytime we've implemented technology, it's enhanced. That's the point of it.
Yes.
It evolves. It evolves the interaction of the human factor and may change what the human interaction looks like. But a lot of that just bases off the increased customer demand and customer need. That world evolves so fast that it's demanding technology to take on some of the stuff just to keep up with it.
You're right. I mean, and so, you know, I'm having a lot of discussion around, I think COVID has accelerated people into using these technology platforms that they may have gotten to 2 or 3 years down the road. So do you have any examples that you might be able to share where that's like customer of yours that have been forced down that path of either implementing automation or, you know, putting everything in the cloud or, you know, moving off premise? I don't know if you have any stories that you can share like that.
We had several clients that came on with us this year under that need. After everything hit in March, the current outsourcing center that they were using or their internal model is one example, all of a sudden became inadequate, right, in a number of different ways. And so where they once would have never, and I'll give you an example, one of them was a medical client of ours, would have never considered a fully virtual model for a call center to outsource to, they went with us. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of compliance factors that go into that and a lot of things that we have to keep up on our end to make sure that we're eligible to do that. But it opened the door for a whole new way of operating for that business that they didn't even consider at that moment. And I think that's what's exciting about the upside of all this is that you know, we're creatures of comfort, right? We all like our little world where this makes sense and this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we do it.
Sure.
It's kind of the mantra in the business world. And things like COVID force everyone to reevaluate almost everything and open our mind to different possibilities. So, with some of those businesses, we saw a good number of them open their door to a virtual model and then look at also different influxes of types of interactions they were getting and saying, okay, do we need to implement new and different IVR technology in here or AI technology interact with customers? So that I think you brought up earlier was a lot of these redundant concerns or questions that are coming in can just be handled before it even reached the agent. And what we found was when we implemented those things, the customers loved it. The customer feedback was great. We were also able to increase first call resolutions, drive down wait times, improve SLAs, all the things that you look for when you're going in to build a campaign for a customer.
Yeah, it's you know, in every aspect of the business, like you said, kind of had to reevaluate what was going on. And you know, I'm just seeing that even there was an article in the Wall Street Journal where I think it was somebody from Discover Card said, well, you know, we're discovering that that's, you know, all virtual isn't always the best because just, you know, the spontaneity that you might get of just being in an office, the just different energy and vibe that you get off of people, you know, bouncing things off of each other. So have you found any kind of suggestions or recommendations to kind of help kind of maintain that spontaneity factor?
Yeah, I think that's a big concern with people, right? Is and there's a portion of that that's very valid. You know, that there are people who work better in a office setting because that's what they are more suitable for, or that's what they're accustomed to. And then there's a percentage of people that work better in a virtual environment. And the middle ground there is where the challenge is. You have some people that you may be able to move over, but what do you put in place to do that? How do you recreate those things that people get in the office in a virtual world? And some of the things that we've done have really revolved around technology, obviously. Some of it's not real complex. It's using Zoom and things like that where, hey, you know, we were able to have, and a lot of people did these happy hours and fun things where people connect. And
sure.
leveraging other technology like Facebook Business Workplace, or there's another product out there called Beehive that's a really neat a visual type of technology that people can use where you can see each other constantly. It's a live feed technology, and there's some other ones that are like it. But what we did and what we recommend to our clients when we're talking to them is we say, let's first clearly identify what your winning existing culture is and if there's any improvements you need to make to it. What is it in its most optimal state? And then what are the biomechanics of that, right? Like, you know, what are the things that actually are happening that drive that, quote, feeling that people are looking for? And now what technology can you leverage to help drive that interaction, communication, and end result is feeling for your employees or your team members? And so I think that's a really important exercise for companies to go through because a lot of times we look at our companies, we're like, we have great culture, but what does that mean? Like, you know, what drives that culture and how do you recreate that? And it is possible in a virtual setting.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of creative ways where people will send out, like, team T-shirts, because a lot of times you have T-shirts that your team wears in the office or things people were putting up in their cubicles, now they're putting up in their Zoom windows, you know, just to kind of keep that team spirit going. And, you know, and I think also it's the coaching side of things, you know, because there's other – you know, people come into work and they kind of come through the door, physical door, and they leave the family in kind of those stresses behind, or, you know, they were not supposed to be part of that world, and now they are part of that world because you're surrounded by it and you can't get away from it. So I think, you know, I don't know if you guys have done this, but I've seen other organizations where they're going out of their way to providing some other kind of support mechanisms, either to the managers or to teach the managers how to give those other support mechanisms in place to deal with all the other unknowns that are out there that involve not just the workplace. So I don't know if you have any examples of that.
Yeah, you're spot on. It's and I'm glad you included the managers in that, because one of the things that happens a lot in the contact center industry is that we focus so much on the agents that we forget about some of those middle management people that are actually the ones interacting with the agents as leaders, you know. And I'm a big advocate that you can't ask someone to go impart something on someone else that hasn't been imparted on them. And so it really has to start at the top, unless you're like looking at an inverted pyramid, but at the top or bottom up, right? And say, okay. When you're talking about these coachings and interactions and connections with people, there are some different challenges. And we've done stuff even to the point of simple internal podcasting or content creation where we're pushing out best practices and tips for work at home, exercise and health tips. We have a whole setup for that where, you know, we're making recommendations on things to put in your practice each day. Because to your point where people had all these different places they were going, on top of being virtual, a lot of people have been home all the time,
right?
Which poses even more issues. So we've been very conscious of trying to leverage different everything from, you know, workout videos and having people come in that may be experts in personal training and things like that to get that type of information to our agents. But when I think about it, it's not really anything any different than we used to do in the site. We used to have gyms come into the site when we were in buildings. And we're just looking at what worked in the business setting, going back to what we talked about earlier, and saying, okay, this worked when people were in this setting. How do we recreate this in a virtual model so that people are still getting fed the things they need
informationally through, you know, LMSs and things like that, and socially and academically, right, so that they can go out and holistically perform.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because we've had an increased interest, obviously, in our simulator, but one of the things that we weren't really focused on before was teaching managers how to deliver coaching conversations. And so we're using our simulator to practice because, you know, they weren't having these conversations as frequently as they were, or they're different types of conversations that, you know, how are things going with homeschooling your kids now? How, you know, that was something you didn't ever discuss before. So it's like,
let's give
you a place to practice that in first so that it's not as awkward when you're in Zoom because you don't have the luxury of maybe reading the body language as much as you can face-to-face. So let's, at least the verbal side of it, get you very comfortable with that so that you can listen for verbal cues versus always just having the visual to feed off of. So it's, it's really important because even I think Twitter was in a webinar I was watching. So Twitter was talking about how they're providing and encouraging people to, you know, watching how much they're logged in, and if they notice people are logged in too much, or, you know, they force them to not even allow them to be logged in. They say, take a break, get away from your desk, you know, so they're really monitoring the productivity levels because obviously, you know, productivity can go down, or your ability to stay focused and do a good job, fatigue sets in, you know, and everybody's got Zoom fatigue these days. So encouraging people not to, you know, constantly be on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something we have had to monitor much more closely and do some creative scheduling, you know, with stuff like that, with breaks and with just an overall scheduling bring people in and bring people out so they don't get burned out. It's just because it's very easy to do because you're locked and loaded at the house, just, you know, sitting there. And on some of these higher pressure campaigns where maybe they're getting inundated by calls, you know, we've had to be very sensitive to that piece and have a close touch on our finger on the pulse of the agents and in the managers too. And so the other thing that you pointed out that I think is very interesting is the coaching part that's changed with all this virtual work is it's really forced. It's opened up the door for more coaching, I think, but it's forced people to get really good at what they do. Again, there are certain things you can get away with being in person, you know, and having somebody sitting 10 feet away from you that may not be best practices, but you can get away with it because you're in the room. When you're running a virtual model, it really forces people to hone their skills and crafts and become experts at not only reading a report, but communication.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, I say that these poor call center agents have more, you know, thermometers measuring their, you know, everyday activities. And I think some organizations are seeing that they're stripping some of those away or they're measuring KPIs differently. So have you done any of that or reassessed some of the KPIs or measurements that you've done with some of your clients?
We've done some, you know, I think, a lot of our stuff is pretty standardized with some of the KPIs we've used, with our clients. One of the things that we've really tried to do when we're onboarding, new clients right now is really spend a lot of time in the onboarding process of getting our hands around what's really important, and not just measuring everything for the sake of measuring something. You know, I think in the call center industry, we could all agree that we are, notoriously, we notoriously overkill some of the reporting data to the point where it's just cumbersome and it doesn't really tell you anything. It just beats people down or wears people out. And so we have tried to peel back some of that and really we have our teams that look at that, you know, and they're constantly analyzing that type of stuff. But on a frontline level, we really want to hone in on the metrics that really drive and change the business versus just bombard everybody with, you know, endless amounts of data.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned LMSs, and you know, I'm kind of on this soapbox of LMSs aren't necessarily always used in the right way. And for example, when they first came out, it was great because I was like campaigning. Yes, so these are going to help you spread learning, and it's going to help, you know, produce content and get to many you know, with the same costs, da, 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 da. But, you know, with new technologies today, and I think one of the things COVID has kind of helped when everybody's being forced to go virtual now is that you can't, you don't have the luxury of sitting next to your buddy to say, oh, how did you do this or how can I do this? Or the shadowing and nesting stages have all been kind of dismantled a little bit. So, you know, I'm saying, you know, in our simulation platform, you know, it's not LMS based. And the reason for that is anything you take in an LMS, like an online course, you still don't know if somebody has the skills, if they're skill ready or floor ready.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and by using our simulator, it provides data, and it's becoming back to that overly dated, where I know from the greeting to the authentication to the asking the right probing questions, that the, you know, every single step of that transaction, you know, are they doing all of the right things? And if they get messed up, I know exactly where they get messed up. You know, so with COVID, you know, we're trying to encourage people to say, you know, rethink the way that you're delivering the learning for mm-hmm. the onboarding process, because you don't have the luxury of an instructor walking around the room. You don't have the luxury of, you know, say a team manager kind of watching how they're handling that call or being on the call with them per se, or having the right technology that allows for that today. So I don't know if you've seen any other technology solutions out there that help kind of, you know, reevaluate the way things are being delivered, because you can't sit in the classroom, you can't sit in a shadowing session. You know, have you guys approached that differently right now?
Well, we've definitely had to approach it differently. I haven't seen a lot of technologies like yours, right? And mm-hmm. I'm impressed by that, because, again, I think to your point, LMSs are fantastic. It's a fantastic tool. But I think when you take something and say this is the end-all, be-all of anything, especially when you're
right.
talking about training, you can't approach training one-dimensional, especially when you're bringing on large quantities of people and you're asking them to take on enormous mm-hmm. amounts of information quickly and go execute on it. There has to be stages.
Right.
The LMS is great. You need it. You need it. You need something that can house content and,
exactly.
and you can build content, yeah. issue content, and test on that content. But on the other side is there's, and we all know this, there's people who can take a test, but they can't go execute on anything they just tested
right.
well on. And so
right.
being able to create that simulation environment to say, okay, you quote, know the information, but can you use
mm-hmm.
and execute
mm-hmm.
and leverage the information properly? Becomes of the utmost importance, because I think that's where a lot of people have historically dropped the ball in moving into this virtual environment. It puts a magnifying glass on that, is that, you know,
mm-hmm.
now you don't have those same avenues to deliver that content, and you either are going to be more heavily on that, or you've got to find some technology like yours or put more people in place, which is not the most valuable resource of time
to
do that when you've got a technology that's out there to do it. So, that I think is where there's a major strategic advantage in looking at technology like yours and saying, hey, this is really going to enhance our ability to see where our issues are with training content, where our issues are with
mm-hmm.
communication. And on the flip side, how do we improve our time to competencies, which is a huge measurement in call centers when you're taking
yes.
people out of training,
yes.
Is how do
yeah.
you speed that up in an environment where we're constantly looking for bigger, better, and faster ways to do things.
Yeah, you know, I was speaking to somebody that does a lot of, they were an outsourcer for Comcast, and they said, you know, we think about, you know, somebody's booking somebody to go on site to set up somebody's cable, right? And they somehow entered the wrong information. Well, they said, well, we didn't find this out till 3 weeks down the road. So to tell that person they did something wrong and to, you know, undo those bad habits with that time span in place isn't as effective as saying I'm in a simulator and I can catch it immediately before you even get on the phone, you know. So I don't know, because, you know, by the time somebody gets a feedback or gets a report they did something wrong, that's not always immediate, and so therefore it's harder
mm-hmm.
to unchange them doing it incorrectly. So, you know, there's other technologies besides ours out there that, you know, I know there's a lot of real-time monitoring, real-time kind of
yep.
bots that kind of monitor and provide color-coded types of things out there. You know, do you see people using more of those, or are they just maintaining what they had?
I think the need for more of it's gone up. I think it's another area where people are having to open their mind to these new ways of doing things. I think next year we'll see a huge increase in that as well. You look at the usage of sandboxes for practicing with that technology, right? Like kind of like you're talking about in simulation, it's always made sense because we think when you think about things like, well, when you're learning to drive a car, a lot of times you take tests and do simulation. You have to take a driving test where you get released on the road. When pilots learn how to fly, they go through simulation so that they don't. The first time they get in a plane after they've read the book is not a live plane with passengers on it, right?
Right.
So,
hopefully not.
Again, people could get hurt, right? And so, but when you look at customer care and sales and these and technical support, these interactions are just as important. And we have a tendency to be like, well, it's the trainer's fault or it's this fault. But if you're not taking time to validate how the information is registering, maybe it's not the trainer's fault. Maybe it just they just need more practice because people learn by far faster by doing something over and over again and creating a habit than they do by just reading a book. It's just how we've always worked as human beings. So I think the need for that type of, quote, sandbox and simulators and things like that will continue to go up. I think it just enhances the training component and the time to competency components that call centers can then go out and offer, because then we can go to clients and say, hey, listen, yes, we can spin this up and get people who are highly skilled in what you're doing on the ground in X number of days or weeks or whatever.
Yeah, versus months, and one of our clients at Microsoft said, you're really helping us deconstruct the call, because when we build a simulation, we have to know what are all the potential ways that you could state a greeting that are acceptable, and then what happens if they don't state the greeting correctly. And so by giving them, sometimes they realize, what's an example of good, better, and best, and it's acceptable, and we build all those kind of metrics into the script. But, and value, what I get disappointed in is the value of what those agents do, because sometimes they're seen as, that's a call center, they kind of push them off to the side, but it really is your first line of defense. And I don't know if you work with your clients to help them position it that way so that they get the attention that they should be getting from, say, the CEO of the company.
Yeah, I mean, when we're working with our clients about and discussing this, even from the onboarding piece all the way through the existing relationship, there's a constant reminder in that conversation of like who's really the truly most important person in the conversation. And I always go back to these are the people that are actually having the interactions. And most of the CEOs that I talk to and work with, they get that on a high level. I think where it gets lost in the weeds is when we all get so bogged down looking at data that we forget about the human component of who's on the front line. And that's the real challenge there, is to go back and have that exercise and say, okay. And again, that comes through doing surveys and having focus groups and talking and listening to people, letting them give you feedback on what their world is really like. And then taking that information and saying, okay, is there technology we can leverage to enhance this for their training, for their day-to-day? Is there another need there? Is it a profile thing? Because sometimes it goes back to your hiring profile. Hey, this position really needs a person that has this type of, quote, worldview or this type of skill set or this type of performance DNA. And are you checking the boxes on those things? And do you need to alter that? Because that might change over time. I think that's one of the statements that I try to reiterate quite often in our meetings, is just open to change as we grow, open to change as we grow. Because I think as any business grows and changes, you have to constantly be open to that. And the historical roadblock that I've run into in any industry, really, but in the call center industry, with different businesses and people I've worked with, is we get closed-minded because we get comfortable with this is the way we've always done it. And what once worked, as what proved in 2020, what once worked very successfully today may not work tomorrow.
Yep.
And so that evolutionary mindset is important.
Yeah, that leads me to my last question then, as far as the change, you know, helping people accept change. What's your technique? Do you say the pain of not changing versus the pain of status quo, or is there a certain technique that you use?
Yeah, the old when the pain outweighs the pleasure, people will change.
Yeah,
I don't really. I mean, it's a reality, but I think when I'm, you know, with us and we're dealing with our customers and our clients, and even our internal team, it's about having that consultative approach and
mm-hmm.
caring about their business. I'd love to say everybody, you know, hey, we care about your business as much as you do. We shouldn't, you know, I mean, nobody cares about your own business as much as you do as an owner or
right,
as a leader.
Right.
But the empathy is a big piece for us in our business of
mm-hmm.
being empathetic to our customers, being transparent and being empathetic. We feel that creates real collaboration. And those are three of our core values. When you can get in and truly collaborate and earn, when you have transparency and empathy, you've earned the right to truly collaborate. That true
yeah.
collaboration allows for opportunity. And then that opportunity is what
yep.
really can catapult people. So those are our core values. That's how we approach our conversations with our customers. We're not perfect by any means, but that's the undercurrent that goes into it. And so we spend a lot of time just trying to learn their business, understand their come from and their passions
mm-hmm.
and their goals and their missions. And then with that, we can help position solutions.
Yeah, no, that's very wise, and I think our audience loves that answer.
Yeah, I need to take those questions everywhere today.
So, Eric, thank you again for sharing your wisdom with us, and I'm sure our audience greatly appreciate it. You know, we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yes, it was awesome. I appreciate you having me on the show, and I had a fun time.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.